If he believed through personal investigation, or by studying the records of the experiences of others, that communication with the unseen was possible, he got some test, hardly ever the one he expected, but an answer, maybe, to some inquiry made weeks before, or, at any rate, an item of information, crisp and clear, that could not be accounted for by any knowledge in the possession of the psychic nor by what was in his conscious mind. By 1908 I had read everything worth reading on the subject of spiritism, and a great deal that was not, and, it was impossible to make any progress in the subject in this damp climate. I determined to visit America again. Chapter 5. Return of Thomson J. Hudson. Itinerary in United States. Arrive at Rochester, N.Y. Mrs. Georgia Hudson manifests through her hand, the law of psychic phenomena. Hudson's views when alive, conversations with Hudson, his views on the subconscious mind and telekinesis, the names of his books given correctly, completely reveals his identity, many dialogues. He accompanies me to Chicago and Detroit, and carries messages to Rochester. He assists Iola to write, tries to prevent me getting a picture in Chicago, manifests at Chicago by precipitated writing, fulfills at Rochester and New York a promise given at Chicago, reasons that probably influenced Hudson when playing these tricks. Mrs. Georgia writes for Dr. Hislop and Dr. Funk in New York, the widow's mite. My dates of arrival at and departure from places in the United States on this second trip for investigations were as follows. Arrival departure Rochester, NY. December 22, 1908. December 28, 1908 Buffalo, NY. December 28, 1908. January 2, 1909 Toledo, Ohio. January 2, 1909. Jan 7, Detroit, Michigan. January 7, January 11, Toledo, Ohio. January 11, January 17, Chicago, Illinois. January 17, January 24, Toledo, Ohio. January 24, February 2, Detroit, Michigan. February 2, February 6, Rochester, NY. February 6, February 26, Chicago, Illinois. February 27, March 6, New York. March 7, the first psychic I sat with for phenomena on my arrival in the United States was Mrs. Georgia, who lives with her mother in Rochester, NY. She is a young lady in affluent circumstances, accomplished, retiring in disposition, and, at that time, inclined to believe that the strange gift which she had possessed for 4 years, of automatic mirror writing, was due to some power within herself and not to outside influences. She had never written except for her personal friends, and then but rarely. I carried a letter of introduction from a namesake in the city, Mr. A. W. Moore, who made no allusion to my nationality or profession, but wrote of me as Mr. Moore. I did not send in my card, but only the letter of introduction. When Mrs. Gear came into the room she asked, "Are you related to my friend Mr. Moore?" I replied, "No." She then took up a pencil, and, putting some sheets of paper under her right hand, the latter wrote backwards as follows, 44, we can come, but you are wrong in thinking that Mr. Moore is a relative, or that he is any old acquaintance. He is a man of the sea. He is a friend of a man who invented the radiopath, sick, and who is also an expert on sanitation. It is Sir Dash, he also knows Lady Dash, he will return to his country, then he will meet them both and tell them of you. They are interested in these matters. The man, Sir Dash, is a celebrated man in his country. I am Hudson. Mrs. Georgia knew nothing of Hudson except that a man of that name had written a book called The Law of Psychic Phenomena, which she had read in a desultory manner 5 years before. She had heard of Sir Dash, but did not know he was married. 57 I knew nothing, personally, of Mr. Hudson, but had read with keen interest two of his books, The Law of Psychic Phenomena and another that I had erroneously recalled as proofs of immortality. This book I thought had been his last. Of his two subsequent works I knew nothing. Hudson's views while in earth life were briefly these: Man is such a wonderful animal and has within him such marvelous potentialities that his ego or individuality is bound to survive the change we call death. The ego is certain to continue its uncompleted experiences in another phase of consciousness. He has within him two distinct consciousnesses, one with which he carries on his practical daily life, the other dormant, but infallible as a record, registering every word he has seen or heard, every scene, however trifling, he has passed through, every experience he has ever known. The former is capable of inductive reasoning, the latter only of deductive. The subjective mind may be tapped for the use of the conscious mind, but, as it is not capable of correct processes of reasoning, if allowed to get the upper hand, so to speak, the result is mental disorder. Communication with the denizens of the next state of consciousness is impossible. When man thinks he is dealing with invisible intelligences, he is simply playing the fool with his subjective mind, or soul, which presents him with reflections of his complete record and lures him on to believe that he is communing with his departed friends. Hudson was deeply committed to these theses. He took care to skate warily over the physical phenomena of spiritualism. Very rightly, he attached the highest importance to the manifestations of Jesus Christ, and drew largely from the gospel narratives to support his case. I have seen him alluded to by a loose writer as a spiritualist. He was nothing of the sort, and he spoke in derision of those who professed to communicate with people who had passed away. He certainly believed in the facts of alleged spiritistic manifestations, and in immortality, but his reasons for faith in the latter was entirely different from these upon which spiritualists base their convictions. I had thought a great deal about Hudson, but not for a year, or I should not have made the mistake I did about the name of one of his books. I confess that, at one time, I was much shaken by the doctrine he put forward. I had read all the arguments for the subjective, or, as Myers calls it, the subliminal mind, and believed in its existence. It is only another name for the soul. Hudson's theory was plausible and well presented, but I soon recovered, and through this consideration, the existence of a subjective mind, or subliminal, or soul, whatever we please to call the register, may possibly account for some of my purely mental experiences, but how can it account for telekinesis and other physical phenomena? Will it account for the passage of a bell from one room into another which is locked? Will it account for the sudden creation of the simulacrum of a human body, sometimes almost as solid as life, for the movement of heavy objects, for the levitation of a human body, for the dematerialization of flowers, and for other physical manifestations, all of which were, to me, proved facts? No. It came upon me suddenly that it was for a purpose that physical phenomena accompanied the mental during the revival in Rochester 60 years ago. It was to anticipate this very argument now set forth in such attractive guise by Hudson. The plain fact is, a sound belief in the existence of discarnate friends cannot be established by mental phenomena alone, because we do not know how far the messages we receive from psychics in trance, or out of trance, are leavened by their individuality. Such messages are extremely valuable, but they require to be backed up by exhibitions of force to convince us that a person is present who can exert power independent of the medium and sitter. If I can have a characteristic message today from one medium, and tomorrow I can see the friend who has passed over, materialized, when I am sitting with another medium, conviction comes. But if I only have the message, it is not so. The information contained in it may have been got surreptitiously from outside, or possibly from me, though this latter contingency can only happen if the subject is one in my upper consciousness, and very rarely then. When Mrs. Georgia came to the words "he will return," I asked her to write with her left hand, which she immediately did. I then asked Hudson, "What was the name of your book?" "A Law of Psychic Phenomena." I did say that inanimate things had souls. Q. I do not remember that. A. No, what I said was this: take the other hand, I am not ambidextrous. Here the psychic changed the pencil again to the right hand, that my sister-in-law was able to tell the history and life of stone. I want to talk to you of better things than titles that you already know. I want to speak of the tests that I can show. Q. Have you altered your opinion about the powers of the subjective mind? How about telekinesis? A. No, I have not. It is the center of the soul force, and can be used during life as after death. It can be cultivated, and the mind projected to faraway countries. It is possible to educate the soul within us. Each person can attract. That is what I know. When the inner soul demands an object to approach, it will attract all the soul force about his aura. Yes, that moves the object, not the subconscious attracts, but the spirit force that can move it. It is the command that moves, the demand that created the forces to action. Q. Can you tell us anything else? A. No, ask me, it gives me strength. Q. Tell us, Mr. Hudson, about your feelings after death. Can your state be described as a happier one than when you were in the body? A. I did not know I had died, I seemed to be there just the same. Death is a progression, like progressive whist tables, you move up. I am working there, as I did here, only my sphere is more congenial. Q. What do you mean congenial? A. It is the souls who are in the same element of progression, the same kidney, as the English say. Q. What do you think of my photograph test? Here the test related in chapter 4. Was described to the spirit. A. That is a test only of the sensitive. All creatures are mediums of greater or less degree. There is an impression of the plate on the medium's mind, and she feels this as you feel that tomorrow will be a fine day. Q. Is the spirit whose photograph is required to be selected, there to help? A. The spirit force is always there. Some people read what I wrote. Here Mrs. Georgia got up from her chair to fetch more paper. You annoy me, breaking up my thoughts. I'm an old soul, and tired can see forces, others can feel it. Q. Is the form in the spirit world the same as it is in the material world? A. It is luminous, not heavy with clothing of fleshly imperfection. Q. Am I right in supposing that spirits are more attracted to us by love than intellectual sympathy? A. The spirits that come are often restless, seeking the old life and habitations that they knew in life, even as an old man seeks the scenes of his childhood. Dot. Q. Is the phenomenon of materialization true? A. Only the few who are clear enough in vision can see it. It is true, as this room and the world is filled with luminous forms that have rarefied the earth. But it is the expectancy that brings the wonders to pass. Jesus expected to see the man arise. When we expect and desire, we have. There was more of a private nature. This first sitting with Mrs. Georgia lasted for over 3 hours. The conditions were excellent. Outside the house it was freezing hard, dry, and a clear sky. Mrs. Georgia was much interested. No such strange or powerful intelligence had ever guided her hand before. She was not a spiritualist. I think I may say that this was the first occasion on which she suspected that she was the instrument of an unseen force. She kindly arranged that I should come again, and the Hudson script ran on for many days in December and February. I found that she could write with either hand, when talking or reading, and in the dark, not a word could be deciphered unless the paper was held up to a mirror or laid upon a piece of white Bristol board, face downwards, when it could be read through the back if the paper was sufficiently thin. When the power was strong, she wrote with rapidity, when it was weak, she wrote slowly. At times the pencil was pointed away from her, and at an angle of 60 degrees from the paper. At others it pointed towards her, and inclined at an angle of 20 degrees from the paper. Mirror writing is not difficult to acquire, but I have never heard of anyone who could write with the speed or abstraction of this lady. I do not doubt that, even in this case, the brain first received the message and impelled the hand to write, but it was done in such a way as to make it highly improbable that she was conscious of a single word until the script was transcribed. On December 24, 1908, with Mrs. Georgia. Q. If anybody is here, will they please make themselves known by writing their names through Mrs. Georgia? A. You must wait, talk a bit. Yes, no music but the voice. Try a duet. Graphophone proceeded with a duet, try a goon song, one that laughs. It will show the gentleman the topical goon shout, which is an institution of the South. Then you may write. As Hudson will come. No question is necessary. Did you enjoy the music? 45. I am here. I want to say that I am much stronger in the evening air than in the daytime. I want to ask you to come Christmas night at 8 o'clock, instead of Christmas afternoon, as my light, medium, is better at that hour. That is why I kept you waiting. Spiritual forces are elusive. You told her wrong. I had told Mrs. Georgia something about what I thought was his last book. It was not that, it is the one you know. You refer to the last book before I passed over. It is the one you have read. It was published in 1903. I had not read his last work, but thought I had done so. You must copy it later before you leave, not now while I am strong. This refers to a proposal of mine that we should at this time write down the interpretation of the mirror writing. I passed away in Detroit, Michigan, 1903. Correct. I was in a government position for some years. I was also a newspaper man. Correct. Do not worry about this conversation. Mrs. Georgia and I were talking nearly all the time, and I had expressed a doubt as to whether it were wise to do so. I come better on the sound of voice. It was a hard life in a Michigan paper. I was jack of all trades. A lawyer in Ohio. Correct. Q. Where did you practice in Ohio? A. Cleveland. Correct. I practiced law. I said I thought he was a doctor. No, Sir Oliver Lodge is the man of physics. He is the head and front of the college. Yes, I have been around here for a long time. I come through this girl because she is of a cheerful disposition, and that cheer attracts me. It is that force that attracts. In life we seek the sunshine, that's what we seek. I am glad to come to this gentleman, that is why I come so strong. It is his vital interest that helps me to come to you. You may copy this now, give me a chance to rest. We copied, go upstairs and lock the door. Mrs. Georgia obeyed. On her return I proposed extinguishing the gas, to ascertain if she could write in the dark. The light was put out, and she wrote as follows: I like the cheer of the light, I like to see the face of the beautiful mother and full countenance of the daughter, and the intelligent face of the distinguished guest. The gas was lighted to read what had been written, and not again extinguished. Q. What was the name of your last book? A. Let me think. Law of Psychic Phenomena, The Divine Pedigree of Man. The subject matter is of the law of life after death. I said that I had never heard of the divine pedigree of man. No, that was not the last book. I wrote the pedigree first. I wished to have time to think, as it was published after my illness. I died the year 1903. Q. What is your full name? A. Jas, the same as Hislop. I said, I think his name was Thomas J. Hudson. No, you are wrong, my name was not Thomas. Go and look at your front door. Open it, and let the other fellow in. Open it wide and alone. Mrs. Georgia went to the front door, opened it wide, and remained a minute or two, then closed it, and returned to the drawing room. My name was Thompson J. Hudson. Don't copy yet. I went out of the back door, and must come in at the front. I went out to get fresh strength. James Hislop is carrying on my work where I left off, that is why I said James was my name, as it is in a sense. I am with him, some day he will hear of me through this girl's hand. Correct, I will help him. You may copy now. I said, he has been writing for 1.5 hours. That makes no difference, I can't come very often, so I want to stay. Mrs. Georgia said, I do think he might have said something more complimentary of me than that I had a full countenance. You need not feel that, you have charm, and that is enough. A discussion took place about knocks in the room, 3 having just occurred. I said I could not get them to respond intelligently. You can if you wish. You can bend the intelligence that comes to you. You can bend a personal intelligence to your will, by molding it as you do here by dominating it. Mrs. George's mother here said, I wish to know the condition of suicides in the next life. Drop out all such suicide talk. I wrote a book on the force of mental healing, that is my last book. Correct, perhaps you had better tell me the name of the book you mean, as you confuse me. I said, it was Proofs of Immortality. Go to the front door, let me think there. Mrs. Georgia went to the front door for a few minutes, and then returned to her seat. You don't mean my last work, You mean a book called The Scientific Demonstration of a Future Life? This is correct, and I regret it having forgotten the proper name, but as I have said before, I knew scarcely anything of Hudson. I now mentioned that we had sat for nearly 2 hours. I can easily state till then, I mean till 10.30. Q, but this is rather frivolous, making the medium run constantly to the front door. I get strength of force out of doors, I like to come. I must take the girl to the air, so I don't over-tie her. She is very young to me, as I am an old man. I was born in 1834. Correct, is not that a great difference in our ages? I was 59 years old when I died. I said, that must be wrong, he was 69. The gentleman is right, I was born in 1834. Let me say 59. Is a woman the only one to dodge their age? Q, did you know I was coming to see Mrs. Georgia? A, I knew that someone would come that would have the interest and vitality to call me. Have hung around this girl's front door for 2 years. None came strong enough to call out the open sesame. Q, are people living in pairs of male and female in spirit life? A, like a school of fish. The congenial flock together. Yes, they do. Q, you misunderstand me. I mean, supposing two people are joined here, can they live in close union there? A, by all means, if the soul is twin. Two people may be joined by a mama in a church, and be as wide apart as the Antipodes. Q, but many worthy people here imagine that, in a future life, the high ideal should be universal, equal affection all round. A, as long as souls are individual they seek the affinity in a spiritual sense. If men and women loved collectively, not individually, they would make trouble enough on earth, as well as in heaven. I know what you mean. You dislike the ideal of spiritual universal love, it would rob love of its value. Front door bell rang, have Mrs. go to the door. Mrs. George's mother went to the front door, and received a telegram. I said, perhaps he will tell us more about this state. Yes, I have lots of information, but it must be tomorrow morning, it is now 10.10, and too late to enter into the exhaustive subject. The only correct timekeeper in the room was the watch in my pocket. I looked at it, and found that the spirit had stated the exact time to a minute, stay a bit, so that my girl medium will have your strength, then I will say good night, and sport my oak, as you English say. In answer to a remark of the mother, I said the climate of England was not suitable for this sort of phenomena, and Mrs. George's writing would not be so good there. A, my girl can. I will come in the morning, but I will not be strong, so I am away. Wait until he copies. December 25, 1908. With Mrs. Georgia, who wrote, I am here, but not strong enough. Have my girl go to the front door and breathe 5 minutes, then I can come. Mrs. Georgia went to the front door, and returned in about 5 minutes. 46 I was surprised, in seeing my articles reread. How faulty the grammar and diction was. I ask as a favor, if you publish them in book form, that you have them edited. Diction and rhetorical display is not what I want. The sense of what I have said must be preserved. I don't know that I want my girl to sit with an American doubter except to show him the truth. If he sends for her, she may go, but he is not to scoff at me, or the value of what I know and have proven. You can see that I am serious and loyal to some of my former ideals. Mrs. Georgia and I sometimes discuss the propriety of her sitting for Dr. Hislop, who is kindness itself to young mediums, but whose natural tendency of mind does not encourage the controls to do their best. The reason you dislike Christmas is the fact that your former festal days were brighter by closer contact with the beloved. You are told this because I see it in your mind. This is evidently an allusion to the death of Mrs. George's father, 4 years before. What I meant by a fine table was this, you have sifted the coarser things of foodstuffs down to a finer diet. Tell my girl how to transmit messages and how to perfect herself in this. She is a bright light, but a mere tyro in the study of the soul, that is where you must talk and educate her in the method to advance. Be the Columbus of this unexplored sea that lies open before you. In a former communication that I have omitted, as it would not interest my readers, Hudson gave a friendly, but candid, account of myself. The only sentence that gave me an uneasiness was, "You are fond of a fine table." This charge I resented, and Mrs. Georgia and I openly talked of the accusation across the table. The reference to the transmission of messages was due to our having attempted, during the sitting, to telepath a definite message to a psychic lady in Italy by pre-arrangement. It was not taken in, as she forgot the appointment. 47 December 25, 1908, p.m. with Mrs. Georgia. Q. Supposing two souls on earth strongly united, but on widely different planes as regards spiritual development. Do they not live together when both have passed over to the next state? A. It is now 7:35. Wait a bit. I looked at the watch in my pocket and found it showed exactly 7:35. Talk a bit, and I will tell you. Q. Does he want the graphophone? A. No, I want the human voice. In talking I gather what you desire from me. Now, apropos of matrimony in the celestial sphere, I have this to say. Man who loves singly and with an isolated devotion will gravitate towards her, just the same as he would buy a railroad ticket to the house of his affinity. Church nor churchmen do not make marriage lawful only in the human sight. The marriage that is based upon baser instincts and for ulterior purposes are soiling their 62 souls. By this method the lives of human marriages are prostituted. The divine marriage is the soul knowledge of each other. Q. Supposing a man marries two wives, and that both are full attachments, what will be the fate of the second wife? A. The one that is the stronger will cling to the man with a stronger force than the other, I mean stronger spiritual attachment. Q. What is to prevent all three living harmoniously together? A. It would be pleasanter for two than for three. Can you imagine that here? Q. Imagine what? A. Freedom from the human love impulse. The lives are progressive, the instincts we carry are the same as we do in this phase. You go from one phase to another. There are twin souls that have been separated centuries finally reunited. The separation was caused in the first instance by a crime against that love union, one being weaker to yield to the importunities of the beguiling tongue. Infidelities are punished in this manner. There are many unfaithful souls soft-mates, separated, seeking through space and the infinite distance for each other, groping in the dark. Q. But supposing one only is guilty? A. The one who is guiltless finds relief in a few centuries of peace and happiness with another who is innocent and unpaired. Now this is the same way in the case of the second wife or husband stage. The spirit of youth that went with the first marriage, often in the second one, has simmered down to a calm dish of peaceful content. You can try in the dark if you want, this in answer to conversation. The lights were put out. Q. Why cannot the spirit see the lines in the dark? A. I can't take the time to figure out the space, and another thing I want to say is that I have tried to prove my identity, and I think I have tested this quite freely. I know it is done to satisfy the society. You have no idea how far I can go in this, but I have exhausted the force in explaining this to you now in this way. I will tell you that your friend Sir Dash, was knighted in 1897. Correct, he is a fellow of the Royal Society. He has written a book. Correct, I have proved that I know I am telling the truth. I will say good. Lit the lights. Found that the writing, as on a previous occasion, was a little wider apart than the writing in full light. It is 8:18. I don't like my girl dressed in black. I hate black. Mrs. Georgia went upstairs and changed into a red robe. I love red, it is the astral color. Give your guest your seal ring, and before he goes ask him for it. Put it on his finger. I want the ring to have his magnetism. Then my girl will have a link, then I can come to her. You can write her, and she will let you know if I come. Oh. There is a guide here that says Mrs. Georgia must write, as my girl's work must not be interfered with. They have planned a great work for her. This is a reference to a play that Mrs. Georgia was writing at the time, and which turned out a success. No, I mean this, if I can come without you, I will, just to test her out. Mrs. Georgia is to have your address, then when I come she will write you. Then you send a question, think of me at a certain time, then I will come to you. I think it funereal, referring to the black dress. I do think her lovely, if not beautiful, poor child. This is in allusion to the joke of Mrs. Georgia and the compliment paid her by Hudson the night before. Q, I hope to be back in February. Could we not have a series of sittings? A, by all means, if you will have your questions all written down, show them to me every night I am with you. I am the guide of the Admiral, and I am going away with him. I met him in this house, and I am waiting 2 years for someone to bring me strong enough.